Last week, you may remember, Francis preached on the story that Jesus told about the shrewd servant. It seems quite a hard one to understand, and yet he drew out the fact that we are supposed to be using the dirty money that the world runs with. We are to use it for building relationships for God's kingdom's purposes. So today we also have three readings that actually focus on the same theme about money, wealth, and how we're to live in the world as disciples of Jesus, seeking first God's righteousness, or as Paul puts it in his letter to Timothy, taking hold of the life that is the real life. Now, I'd like to start with the gospel reading today. It's a reading from Luke. It's very familiar, the story of the rich man and Lazarus. But to really understand this, we need to try and understand it as Jesus' first hearers understood it. And we have to go into a bit of a different world to do that. I hope I can take you into the ancient world of biblical times. But we have all grown up in relatively Western societies, which have a worldview, an underlying way of thinking that has been shaped by Christianity since Constantine. It's what's sometimes called Christendom, and perhaps in a symbolic way, the death of Queen Elizabeth marks the end of this Christian influence, which has been waning really since the Enlightenment in some ways. However, much of the world still holds to the values that of that Christian era. Human rights, for example, are built on those Christian values, but unfortunately they're cut away from their Christian roots. And slowly today, those rights are changing from the basic Christian values to whatever society wants them to be. You know, for example, the right to not be called by the pronoun that matches your biological gender, all sorts of other things that where rights are changed according to society and away from those Christian values that are built on. So in our basic Christian Western worldview, it's still assumed, though, that some people that people have some sort of equal value, and that somehow we should all have some sort of right to have our basic needs met. And that's actually very different from the sort of world that Jesus and Paul lived in. The radical differences between the common worldview of that time and now made that Christian message that they came with, and especially the behavior of Christians and the way they lived that out, that really stood out in that world. They were living by values that were very, very different. So what was that world like? Well, some examples. The Roman emperors were praised and exalted by how many they killed and how many prisoners they took. That was their, in their conquests, that was what was really lifted up. Slavery was the basic way in which most people were employed. They were owned in order to work for their owners. Women were generally regarded as the property of their male relatives or their husbands. Children were basically discarded if they weren't wanted or even sacrificed. And poverty was basically the general state of the vast majority of people, with destitution only an accident or sickness away. There's a whole devaluing of humanity and human life associated with that, that we don't really get with our basically Christian idea of society. And it wouldn't be acceptable, or it isn't really acceptable today, to have those sorts of ways of thinking. So in relation to today's readings, wealth was considered a birthright and a blessing to anyone who had it. And those who were poor, sick, or destitute were considered to be cursed, the lowest of society, no value. And Judaism stood out a bit in this, and that it did insist that at least the people of God, and even those who dwelt among the people of God, were supposed to be treated as made in the image of God, with lives of value, and some property rights, and justice and mercy was expected. However, you know, even as our Amos passage today showed, the prophets were often calling the people of God to that, because injustice was more the norm, and the disadvantaged in society were not being protected as they should have been. So we're talking about a very different world, and Jesus is speaking into that. So Jesus, with God's heart for justice and mercy, is regularly both teaching about the plight of the poor and the sick and the destitute, but also illustrating in his actions of healing and connection with these outcasts, society, that God's kingdom righteousness required something very different. Now, in that world, it was common to equate wealth with virtue. Yeah, the rich man in the story is clothed in royal purple, reflecting their favored position with royalty, and with fine linen, a symbol of purity, which is assuming their righteousness. In the ancient world, concepts like wealth and virtue and masculinity worked together, and they reinforced one another to solidify that elite status. Wealth was generally regarded as a blessing from whatever gods people held to. Now, in our world of today, the slippage away from a Christian worldview can be seen in our thinking too. Today, people may also think that good people who work hard and live righteously can expect to be rewarded with means. Likewise, people with means are seen as good. You know, they're smart, they're hardworking, they're righteous, because they are able to acquire wealth. Just look at how many of the city council candidates in elections coming up are described in their election literature. Meanwhile, some people see the beggar on the street today and think, it's his own fault. He's chosen. You know, there are agencies to help him. He should go and get a job. You know, if people are crying out for workers at the moment, if we give him money, he'll only spend it on drink. You know, we better stay away from him. He might even be violent or abusive, and so on. Now, I have an example of that from the church in Eindhoven. So it's not just non-Christians who are thinking like this, perhaps. This, the way that the Western worldview has moved away from Christian values. It's an example about a guy called Tone. He lost his house and he came with his car piled high to stay in the corner of the car park just next to the church. And we saw him there and we spoke with him and heard a little bit of what had happened. And then at the end of the service, we told everyone, look, there's a guy speaking, guy in our car park there. And we told them about Tone. And we suggested that some might like to go and reach out to him, go and talk to him. Now, the mainly European husbands immediately said the very things that I just said before. You know, it's his own fault. You know, he's done something that caused him to be there. You know, there are agencies to help him. He should go and get a job. You know, if we give him money or anything like that, he'll only spend it on drink. You know, he might be abusive or violent. You know, we can't go to him. Meanwhile, a trickle of actually mainly Asian wives with more traditional Christian values, they reached out. They took him cups of coffee. One even took a little paper cup with some of the flowers from the church arrangement. And that so touched Tone that the next week he came into church and he started pouring the coffee because he felt he had to do something, at least first going to get coffee from the church. And, you know, he became a member of our congregation. And for a few weeks, he was still living in the corner of the car park. But eventually, he got his life slightly more together. But that mindset, that was even in the church, the way the society is slipping away from those Christian values. Now, the idea that in the parable that Jesus tells, that the rich man is a good man, is directly challenged. The rich man, who's not even named here, he overlooks Lazarus in his rich house, who sits with his sores at the gate. The fact that the poor man is named and the rich man is not is an interesting reversal. But the rich man and his actions are still the focal point of the story. Humanizing Lazarus with a name draws more attention to the inhumane way he is treated by the rich man. And the text doesn't say if the rich man's cruelty towards Lazarus is intentional or not. Neither is particularly defensible. It was part of the role of the wealthy in Judaism to provide alms to the poor in their community. Even if it was largely self-serving, patronage was expected, an expected means for some of the poor to be fed, while the wealthy reinforced their status with virtuous action. Often there was a bench outside homes where the poor could wait for assistance. A beggar who sat on this bench at the gate could expect some sort of attention, especially from a feasting host and guests. And as verse 19 says, this particular rich man feasted every day, meaning that Lazarus was denied many times as the rich man repeatedly ignored the call of the prophetic writings. Further, verse 21 makes clear that Lazarus is not asking for much. Scraps and leftovers from the sumptuous feasting would have made all the difference. This reversal of the association of wealth and virtue gets particularly vivid in verse 23, as the parable states directly that the rich man has gone to Hades after his death, the underworld. This is contrasted with Lazarus, who had gone to be with Abraham. Now, I just want to take an aside to note that this passage makes no reference to the medieval ideas of heaven and hell that were actually thought up around this passage. Jesus has just used a common picture of the time about the afterlife to illustrate his point. He's not saying anything about what happens after death. And he's not saying that that's the way things happen. It's a bit like the way we might speak about the sun rising, even though we actually know it's about the earth turning, you know. So that's the picture that Jesus uses in this bit, just to illustrate the point that virtue and wealth do not go together. The dynamics of power actually come into focus here. during Lazarus' lifetime, the rich man's power was absolute and unquestioned. He had authority. In exchange, he was supposed to play a role, which he did not fulfill. Now his power is gone. Even in this situation, though, the rich man tries to assert some authority. In verse 24, asking for relief from his suffering, he addresses Abraham as father, which implies a close relationship with obligation. And then he tells Abraham what he wants him to do. He asks that Abraham send Lazarus, whom the rich man repeatedly neglected, to help him. Yeah, famously, the rich man never does get it. He understands the message about wealth and the poor, but he approaches Abraham as if Abraham were his peer. Lazarus remains an inferior who can be sent to comfort him, or even to sent to preach to his ancestors. The parable turns from the changed fortunes of the rich man and Lazarus to the question of people who do not get the point. Surely Moses and the prophets supply enough reasons to treat other people with dignity. If people still do not repent, even Lazarus's miraculous return will not convince them. What Jesus is teaching here is that God's kingdom relationship, that special relationship that we can have with God, is for anyone, including the disadvantaged person with the lowest status in society. It's not something that wealth or social status confers. And that those who are advantaged are to treat all, including those whom society might reject, with dignity and justice. The challenge is to all of us, as it was to the rich man's siblings, to seek God's kingdom justice in every interaction we have. Paul's letter to Timothy also fleshes out how this works with respect to money and wealth. He does not say wealth in itself is bad, but that it can stand in the way of our allegiance to God and his kingdom. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It's not that money is the root of evil. We often mishear that one. Yeah, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And for disciples, a heartfelt confession of faith in God is incompatible with the longing for material abundance. The passage speaks of the call to be content with having our basic needs met. And if we have more, to be generous and ready to share and to do good works. Now, that's a lot more active than just giving away our resources for the poor. It implies that we'll use all of our resources to further God's kingdom and his righteousness, his justice. That includes tithing, almsgiving, and our own actions for justice, our own actions in treating all of those who are disadvantaged with dignity. We are not called to use our spare wealth to solve the problem of poverty. We are called to be active in furthering God's kingdom righteousness in our daily lives and actively using everything that God has given us, all the advantages we have, all our resources for that too. So as Paul commends Timothy, we are to pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness, not trusting in what we have or holding on to our advantages in life, but taking hold of the life that really is life. This is giving our all to Jesus.